Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Low Rates Fuel Housing, Zombies, and Chaos. And of course, these low interest rates globally are fueling a lot more than just that. But we had some housing data come across the wires today, and we have the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index jumping 11.9% year over year in February, the most since March of 2014, and slightly above market consensus, which was at 11.7%. Some of the biggest markets were Phoenix, San Diego, and Seattle. And considering the whole nine census divisions, so the national average, house prices rose 12%, a fresh high since February of 2006. So our reference point is going back to the housing bubble. Okay. So again, as I have mentioned last week, as I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, we are dealing with a triple whammy. This is the trifecta. This is an economic and financial nuclear time bomb waiting to go off. When that happens, your guess is as good as mine. Timing these types of events is extremely difficult. That's not what I'm attempting to do. What I'm attempting to do is simply identify them, root cause them, and bring it to people's attention so they can be best prepared to handle this. So that triple whammy, again, is the trade wars and the fiscal policies that have been implemented. That's emblematic of the Great Depression. Those are the actions and policies that caused the Great Depression. So you got to go back 1929, 1930s. You have the fascination and the obsession with the tech sector and cryptocurrencies. This is the new fad. This is the new game in town. This stuff only goes up. Highly reminiscent of the dot-com era. And now, of course, with the housing market, reminiscent of the Great Financial Crisis. So it's 1, 2, 3. And I can assure you, just based off of, I think, sound reasoning and common sense, these forces combined are not going to make for something pretty. It's going to make for something very ugly, very nasty. And it's going to be global. It's going to be systemic wide. So I want to take a deeper dive into some of the housing market data. I want to look at some of the yields on triple B and triple C debt, if we can get to that. And when it comes to the chaos with today's podcast title, I want to cover, if we have time, a couple articles relating to a little skirmish on the seas with the U.S. Navy and Iranian Navy, and a brief article with respect to Nigeria and some of the security concerns that they are contending with. And again, this is all dealing with that intersection of economics, politics, and social issues. You have to understand it, you have to respect it, and you have to appreciate that all of these things move together. And there are opportunities, good and bad. And that is what we are in the midst of. The bad might be, in the case of Nigeria, enemies looking to exploit economic weakness. That could be the case with other major players. Maybe that's what Vladimir Putin is attempting to do with Ukraine. I mean, we don't know the end goal. Is he going to be serious? Is he really going to send Russian troops into Ukraine to really have an all-out war, major conflict? Or is he just trying to get a seat at a negotiating table? Is he trying to exploit the economic weakness that is taking place in Ukraine, but also the economic weakness that is actually taking place in the United States? Knowing that we can't afford another full-out, full-blown war, we can't do it. So is that something that maybe kept him at bay before, where we had the money, we had the resources? And that was sort of, I'm going to step back a little bit because the United States is an ally of Ukraine, and they'll come in and blah. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait until there's weeks of an ally of my other enemy, which, of course, is us in Ukraine. Okay, so there's a lot of moving parts, and low interest rates is a contributing factor to this. Because with these low interest rates, we get these types of price movements in financial assets, whether that's stocks, whether that's bonds, whether that's real estate. These are the things that we are witnessing. We talked yesterday about the youth revolts that are coming, if not already here, things that we witnessed in 2019 and covered at length. During 2019, before the pandemic, which needs to be stressed because the global economy was weakening prior to the pandemic. The article in South Korea yesterday where young people, like in so many other places around the world, cannot afford to get their lives started. They cannot afford to buy an apartment, a condo, a home. They're being priced out. And then you're dealing with the corruption and the fraud and the abuse of power from one government after the next. This is a global phenomenon, and this is only going to get worse. And it's only going to get worse in this type of environment because there's nothing but liquidity sloshing around. Because one central bank after the next, in conjunction with one federal government after the next, continues to kick the can down the road. And the way that they are doing this is by printing currency, throwing it into the system, borrowing and begging for money, and throwing it into the system. And this causes this vicious upward cycle. And there will come a time when it turns into a vicious downward cycle. And with these rates and all of this liquidity flooding the system, this is where you're starting to witness the intersection here of what's taking place in the real economy, not the bogus BS government numbers that they always give us, especially with respect to GDP and employment and inflation. But then you have to deal with the politics. Again, prime example was South Korea, with those politicians front-running new legislation to put a cap on rental increases. So they say, oh, well, we know this law is going to be signed, so we have our own investment properties. We're going to raise our rates above the cap before the cap goes into effect. How nice of them. Great way to screw over their constituents, right? Par for the course. Doesn't matter if you're talking the U.S. Senate, the Korean Senate. It doesn't matter. Pick a country, any country. You got problems. So you got the political fallout because of the economic dealings, and then you're going to have the social issues all wrapped up in it. It's all going to continue. It's all going to gain momentum. All right, so let's get through some market performance, then we'll take a deeper dive into the housing data and go from there. So we have the dollar index at 90.99, so right there at the 91 handle, slightly up overnight. We have Bitcoin trading at about $55,000 a coin, not too much movement in the Forex market currently. It's a choppy day on Wall Street today. This is usually par for the course on the Tuesday, the day before the conclusion of the FOMC meeting, which of course is going to conclude tomorrow, and we will hear from Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve. All expectations, the federal funds rate will remain unchanged at basically an all-time record low. They will remain committed to their $120 billion per month purchasing, quantitative easing policy of purchasing U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, despite the fact that the housing market is on fire. Okay, quote unquote. And he won't be asked, you know, any pressing questions that we're used to. And it's going to be a tough day for me because I'm going to have to listen to him, Jay Powell. And then in the evening, I'm going to have to listen to our demented idiot president, Joe Biden, ramble about spending more money that we don't have in the evening in his joint session before Congress, that speech he's going to make. So I guess, you know, I should just start drinking now and get drunk just to have a good time. But overnight futures market trading, we got the Dow Jones slightly in the red, down 0.1%. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100 are both in the green, up about 0.2%. Japanese cash trade in the green, up 0.4%. Pretty much a sea of red across the pond in Europe, with the exception of the Spanish markets putting on a gain of about 0.6%. Australian cash trade putting on a gain of about 0.4%, and Chinese stocks are currently flat. On the commodity front, we have WTI $62.90 a barrel, Brent $66.38, natural gas with a nice gain at $2.87. Even gasoline is now above $2, trading at $2.02. Of course, that's the commodity. What you're paying at the pump is likely more than that. Gold and silver, we got gold at $1,771 an ounce, silver at $26.02, both in the red overnight. We have copper up another 1.3% at $4.51 a pound. And as we stated yesterday, a lot of this is off of the back of the Chilean miners on strike. And we just thought it couldn't go any higher. It does. Lumber is at $1,420 per 1,000 linear board feet. I'll repeat this, $1,420. Lumber just keeps on climbing. But say it with me, gang, there's no inflation, okay? Nothing. Don't worry about the copper prices. Don't worry about the oil prices. Don't worry about any of this stuff. None of the construction materials, none of the gasoline. Don't pay attention to any of it. It doesn't exist. Don't pay attention to your utility bill. Don't pay attention to your medical costs, your insurance premiums. It's all a joke. It's just on paper. It doesn't really cost you that much. And that's something, of course, that Jay Powell will say tomorrow. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is at 1.64%. So nice little increase there on Uncle Sam's 10-year. So what is that telling us? What's the anticipation as to what the Federal Reserve is going to do? Is this going to be indicative of the bond market starting to sniff out inflation, which, of course, is the camp that I'm in? Or are they going to buy the Federal Reserve's recent narrative that increasing yields are indicative of economic recovery, which I don't believe. I don't buy into that at all. But the Federal Reserve is on a spin campaign. That's all they got left. That's really the only tool that they have left. They want to act like the tough guy. They want to act like Dirty Harry, make my day inflation. We got the tools to combat it. They're not going to combat inflation because that means they're going to have to increase interest rates. They're not going to do that because they can't. They tried this trick when supposedly the economy was the best ever, according to, you know, many pundits, according to the then president, President Trump at the time, and his cronies in the White House saying it was the best economy ever. Of course, it wasn't, but that's not what we were told. And so that was the perfect time to start tapering the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. I mean, my God, they've been doing it for a decade at that point. You know, now's the time to really start tapering it off. We can stop this quantitative easing nonsense. We can start to increase interest rates. If we can't do it now, then when can we do it? And they bowed to the market because the market, the stock market, collapsed by 20% in the fourth quarter of 2018. And again, that was the first shot across the bow. Economic historians are going to find that as an inflection point in this asinine, criminal economic experiment that we have been dealing with for the past 13 years now, 12, 13 years with quantitative easing. That was the warning shot across the bow. And the Federal Reserve did a 180. Okay, we're going to continue with it. We're not going to deal with tapering anymore. We're going to start, you know, interest rates are where they are. And then they started to go down. And then the pandemic occurred. Now they can get away with anything. They can justify the unjustifiable. They can double their balance sheet now. No problem whatsoever. Nobody questions anything. It's supposed to be a system of checks and balances. Who overrules you? Who approves this? Just a bunch of 12 appointed eggheads. They weren't elected by we the people. They were appointed. They're not held accountable to anybody. The president doesn't overrule them. Congress doesn't overrule them. They do what they want. And these actions, in conjunction with other central banks, the major central banks, are fueling these housing booms, are creating and propping up zombie corporations, and are creating this type of fragility within the system that leads to all of this type of chaos. And when I really say chaos, I mean these geopolitical insecurities. All right, so let's take a deeper dive into the S&P Case-Shiller Home Index. So here is the U.S. National Home Price Index. And I just want to provide some historical context so we know what we're talking about, as opposed to just throwing numbers out. You say, well, what does this mean? I don't know what this number means. So where we are, again, U.S. national home price, and then we'll get into the 20 city and the 10 city, okay? So with the National Home Price Index, we are currently at a reading of 236 on the index, all right? 236. What does that mean? Well, where were we in 2006 before the subprime implosion? In May of 2006, or June of 2006, was pretty much the peak, we were at 184. So that's going back to June of 2006. This index was at 184. And again, we are currently at 238. All right, so that's a sizable increase. It's been sort of steady as she goes. Obviously, this index came down subsequently over the few years after the subprime and broader market implosion. And then it started to just steady as she goes, up, 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 and up. Decent year-over-year gains. What you have to pay attention to is those year-over-year changes. You have to pay attention to the slope of the line. And what we're currently witnessing is another basically vertical line, which is reminiscent of where we were in the lead-up to the subprime crisis. And that's what's significant about what we're looking at. And given the types of changes that we are likely going to continue to see as a result of COVID-19, as a result of an increase to remote work, as a result of people wanting to get out of these larger cities because of, you know, a number of reasons, the expense, maybe people just don't like being, you know, living on top of each other in all of these high-rise apartments, whatever the case might be, this is going to be a trend that I think continues. So, again, I don't want to necessarily time anything, but I think this thing still has legs to go. I think the housing market is going to continue to see people leaving the cities and coming to the suburbs. And I think that that demand that exists is going to continue to put upward price pressure, or at least start to stabilize these building and material construction materials, these prices at these levels for some time. So I don't think this is going to be temporary. I don't think this is just going to be transitory as the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Secretary and others would have us believe. They're guessing, they're making it up. They're hoping at the end of the day that inflation is transitory, just like they were hoping in 2005, 2006, when some people out there were ringing the alarm bells with respect to the real estate market. Then Ben Bernanke, the chair of the Federal Reserve, saying, it's just going to be contained. The subprime, we really don't have to worry about anything else. It's not going to be the broader market. It's not going to be a systemic event. Of course, those were his famous last words. So are the famous last words of Jay Powell going to be, well, inflation is just going to be transitory? And I think that is going to be the case, because I do not see inflation being transitory. He is hoping that we're just going to have to see some higher prints with respect to CPI and PCE, these inflation metrics that the Fed likes to look at, basically a result of the base effects, which we mention here all the time too, because of how low things were last year. It's easy to get a higher read on a year-over-year change because of how low things were in the prior year. You know, very true of what we're likely going to see with respect to GDP figures. Plus, the GDP figure has been greatly distorted because of all of the money printing and the government spending and the handouts. Okay, so all of this stuff is distorted. It's all a big charade. It's all smoke and mirrors. But this is the U.S. National Home Price Index. And then on a year-over-year basis, we're at 11.9%, which we also stated at the top of the podcast. So 11.9% year-over-year increase in the National Home Price Index. Where were we in 2005? It peaked at 14.5%. So we're starting to see this same type of year-over-year increase. We're getting there. And if this thing still has legs and room to run, which I think it does, we may very well see a print of 14.5% year-over-year increase. Okay, and that's when it peaked. All right, so that's something to be mindful of, and we're going to continue to monitor this closely because this is part of the triple whammy. This is part of the trifecta of something that can cause a lot of chaos. And as I mentioned last week, basically in a Google search term, something that is on fire in Google search trends is, when is the housing market going to crash? Because people want to buy homes. Young couples want to start families. They want to start a home, but they cannot afford it at these prices. And that's the other thing that I've been railing against for the past couple of years since this podcast has been online. It's not about the borrowing costs. It's about the price of the asset. If it was just about the borrowing costs, then people wouldn't be searching, when's the housing market going to crash? They're asking that question because they want to get into the housing market, but they can't afford it. And they say, well, you know, do we want to get locked in? Or are we going to end up being underwater quickly, depending on the market? And these are serious questions. And people understand that this is all a joke, that it's all smoke and mirrors. Again, they might not be able to put their finger on as to why this is happening, what the federal government's doing, what the Federal Reserve and other central banks are doing, but they know that this is wrong. And it is. Now on to the 20-city composite. So where were we back in 2006? This peaked back in April at around 206.6 on this 20-city index. So 206.6, where are we today? 247.9. So again, another steady increase, and we're starting to see that vertical slope over the past year, which one would have thought would have been somewhat the opposite. You have this great shutdown, this great lockdown. This is one of these things. This is one of these breakdowns in typical correlations as to what we witness in times of economic stress. But when the government's giving you quote-unquote free money, I guess these types of things are likely to occur. So this is an all-time high on the 20-city composite, well above where we were during the lead up to the housing crisis, and on a year-over-year basis, again, 11.9% for the 20-city as well. Where were we in 2004, increase of about 17% year-over-year. So still room to run, and we could hit those numbers as well, and I think that will sort of be the time when we might start ringing the bell that, okay, now we really got to start paying attention here. And this could happen within this year. That's most likely possible. This is still early spring. So, you know, real estate market, you got people buying and selling homes. I mean, that prime market, that prime season is now. It's now and in the summer months. And there's not a lot of supply on the market. People don't want to sell their homes. You still got the COVID lockdowns and restrictions, and people are concerned with higher prices. Well, you know, if I sell my house, am I going to be able to get another one? And how much is that going to cost me? So you have those concerns. And with the commodity prices, new homes can't keep up with the demand. And with those construction material prices, everything's going up. So this is just, again, a self-feeding cycle that is pricing a lot of people out of the market. And as we stated last week, which has been reported by major news outlets, is a lot of people purchasing these homes are actually corporations. So it's not just these younger couples or people moving up in their careers and wanting a bigger home or whatever the case might be. It's pension funds. It's hedge funds. It's private equity. It's foreigners with a ton of cash who are trying to get their money out of their respective countries. Okay, so you're pricing out these people who are actually these younger couples or whoever trying to buy a starter home or trying to get into a bigger house because they're expanding their families or they want to. This is ridiculous, but this is exactly what's happening. They have the money. Well, where did they get the money from? Oh, that's right, the printing press. They got it too. And they're coming up and they don't care what the asking price is. That's why you have these crazy bidding wars. All cash. Young couples don't have all cash. They might say, yeah, we're going to go for, we'll bid the asking price. Maybe we can go up a little bit above it, but we can't go up that much more. But that's not a problem for some of these pension funds or hedge funds or private equity because they're just sitting on cash. Because they're the ones that get the bulk of the money. That's how this game works. That's why you see $8 trillion going to the world's billionaires in 1 year, in the midst of what I am calling the greatest depression. How does this make any sense? $4 trillion gain to the top 1% in this country. You see where the money goes? You see the games that are being played? And it has ripple effects across the spectrum. That intersection of economics, politics, and social issues. This is why youth revolts are coming, if not already here. So now we're looking at the 10-city composite. So back in during the peak, prior to the GFC, we're in April of 2006. This was at a reading of 226.9. We are currently at 261.2. And the year-over-year increase currently for the 10-city composite is at 11.6%. So the national average, the 20-city composite, and the 10-city composite are all flirting with year-over-year increases of 11.5% to 11.9%. So that's something to be extremely mindful of. And the year-over-year increase back in 2004 reached a peak of 20.5%. So still room to run on this as well. And if we get closer to these numbers, then that's when I will start ringing the alarm bells that now we really have to be concerned. But until then, I think there's room to run. There's some legitimate demand for these homes, and there's just not enough supply for the time being. And we're going to continue to see upward price pressures on one commodity after the next. And it is not, in my opinion, going to be transitory as much as the Federal Reserve and the government is going to want it to be, because revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. And if people can't afford to eat, and that might not necessarily be a problem in this country, although it is to some extent, it's a big problem in many, many countries around the globe. And we live in a global economy. And I don't think these risks have been properly priced in to the market, because they just think that the Federal Reserve has their back at any cost, at any price. And, you know, there's a lot of times throughout history that the Federal Reserve does have the market's back. We are definitely in one of those periods. But it tends to fail at some point. It tends to fail when there's system exhaustion, when there's an exogenous shock to the system, and the Federal Reserve is just incapable of fighting everything. They can't do it. They are not bigger. They are not stronger than the markets. No matter what Christine Lagarde says, bring it on. When she mocks and taunts the markets, bring it on. Give us your best shot. It's going to happen, and they're not going to be able to combat the natural market forces. Running near 30 minutes, obviously I like to keep the podcast at about a half hour, so I want to skip the zombies because we've talked about the zombies several times before. I did want to get into some other data, so we'll save that for another time. But I hope that some of these financial journalists tomorrow during the Q&A session with Jay Powell ask him about these zombie corporations, ask him about corporate debt yields and just the ridiculousness of them. What are you doing? The markets are supposed to clear. These poorly run corporations of all sizes are supposed to restructure. That would have been healthy for the long-term benefit of our economy. Instead, you've propped them up and created others. How is that a good thing for this economy? How is this a good thing for your dual mandate, with this in particular being the question of employment? If all of these companies have to spend a disproportionate amount of their cash flow to pay debt, then how can they hire people? It's a basic question. It's common sense. How is that going to help you achieve one of your dual mandates? I would like an answer to that. But this is an article out of Reuters. Nation is on fire. Nigerian lawmakers demand action on security crisis. Nigeria's parliament called on the presidency, armed forces, and police to address the country's mounting security crisis on Tuesday, with the lower house urging President Buhari to declare a state of emergency. The resolutions come as a wave of violence and lawlessness sweeps across Africa's largest economy. Security forces, including the military deployed across most of Nigeria's states, have shown little ability to stem the tide. The president should immediately declare a state of emergency on security so as to fast-track all measures to ensure the restoration of peace in the country, according to a statement by the lower house. In the Northwest, gunmen have kidnapped more than 700 school children since December as militants pillage communities in the region. In the Northeast, the armed forces are still struggling in a 12-year war with Boko Haram and Islamic State's West Africa branch. On Sunday, more than 30 soldiers died in an attack. According to one senator, the nation is on fire. The president must rise to the occasion and bring in people to save this country, or else we will be consumed. We cannot keep quiet any longer. The Senate upper house called for massive recruitment for the military and police and procurement of new equipment for security forces. Meanwhile, the Senate also resolved for its leadership to meet Buhari to discuss the insecurity and invite Nigeria's army chief and other commanders and intelligence chiefs to speak on the matter. So I bring this up because Nigeria has been on our watch list. We talked about them several times in the recent past. One was with inflation and food prices. Another was with the demographics that exist within Nigeria. Nigeria is one of the largest economies in Africa, has, I believe, is the most populous nation in Africa with, I think, some 200 million people and a lot of young people. So again, this is feeding this narrative of youth revolts. They have the inflation, they have empty stomachs, they have poor prosperity, poor opportunity, and a poor outlook, and they have this type of security crisis. Ding, 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 check the box, check the box, check the box. Okay, now we hope that they get these things under control, and we will continue to monitor them closely. But this is just another thing that can cause ripple effects because of the interconnectedness of the global economy. And Nigeria is a sizable producer when it comes to oil. So that's something to be mindful of as well. And then lastly, this is out of the Navy Times. We have U.S. fires warning shots at Iranian fast attack boats harassing the Navy and U.S. Coast Guard ships. The U.S. Navy fired warning shots on Monday at three fast attack crafts of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' Navy, which were harassing the coastal patrol boat Firebolt and U.S. Coast Guard patrol boat Baranov, the latest in a series of such confrontations. As the U.S. ships were conducting routine maritime security operations in the northern Arabian Gulf, the Iranian vessels approached the U.S. crews at an unnecessarily close range with unknown intent. Despite multiple warnings via bridge-to-bridge radio and loud hailer devices from the U.S. ships, the dangerous maneuvers persisted. It wasn't until the Firebolt fired warning shots that the Iranian vessels started to back off. Now, such an occurrence occurred earlier this month as well. Now, we don't know if this is just bad seamanship, right, which this article gets into, if this is clearly intentional. But regardless of what may be the case, it sets the stage for an accident that the Iranian vessel crashes into one of ours, or one of ours crashes into one of theirs, somebody gets shot, somebody gets killed, and then who knows how it escalates from there. That's why I get concerned when we start sending our people all over the place. These types of events can occur. And it might not even be something like this. It could just simply be a false flag event. Something that we're told happened that didn't happen. We've been told lies before that got us into wars. Okay? This wouldn't be the first time our government has lied to us to get us in to some sort of conflict or all-out war. So that's on the table as well. So you might actually have an occurrence, or it might just be made up. But the fact that they're there sort of gives credence to the story. Well, yeah, maybe something did happen. They've been over there, so yeah, I guess that's possible. And we typically don't find out that it was a false flag attack, that it was a lie, many years down the road. Okay? So understand the connectedness of everything. I hope I do a good job at doing so. That's why I do this podcast. Low rates, fuel housing, zombies, and chaos. Tomorrow will be a full day of BS with Jay Powell and Joe Biden. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I'm Alex Caritas. Godspeed.